You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 14th of November, 2019. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting at radioalbion.com. Well, it's Thursday today. We haven't had a live broadcast on the Daily Nationalist for 2 weeks now, and I'm sure you are all just dying to hear from geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. Matt, good afternoon to you, sir. How are you doing?
Well, finally, your listeners have meaning in their life again now that I'm back on to the beautifully named Radio Albion. So I'm very pleased to be here.
I thought you'd appreciate that. Well, I know you appreciate that. I think it's a good name. It's an interesting name. Did you know the actual origin of the name Albion? It was the name of a Phoenician princess, and her father was a really nice, honorable king, and he had 36 daughters, I think it was, and Albion was the oldest, and he married all these daughters off to these other kings, and they turned out to be absolute monsters. They basically refused to obey their husbands. So these princes went back to the king and said, look, you've sold us faulty goods. These daughters of yours are all absolute bitches. So he said to them, look, you've got to behave yourselves, and they refused to behave themselves. And what they did, you'll never believe this, they actually killed every one of their husbands while they were asleep in bed at night. An absolutely terrible thing that they did. And for that, they were banished. And the king put them all on a boat and he sent them all off from Phoenicia. And they washed up on the land of Britain. And it wasn't called Britain back then. And the eldest of these daughters of his was actually called Albion, and they named the island Albion, but there was no men on the island, and of course they missed the company of men, especially after they had killed their husbands, and apparently the devil took on diverse forms and shapes of the various races of men and interbred with them, and they created a race of giants, and eventually Brutus arrived on the island and slaughtered them all, and that's where the name Albion comes from. And also, of course, it comes from the Latin word albus, which means white. You weren't expecting to hear all that, were you?
Right. Well, so what better name for a radio network like this than naming something after her, which I'm sure every syllable of that story is literal truth. I'm absolutely positive.
Yeah, it's great, isn't it? It's got lots of links with this. Anti-feminism, being white, being Anglo, speaking the English language, all sorts of links. Yeah, it's a great name. Anyway, we're not here today to talk about Radio Albion. We're here today to talk about something that's happening in Ukraine, something really interesting that could lead to a lull in the war, or actually the end of the war, which is what I would really hope to happen. And it's to do with the guy, the puppet master, the man who has put the Ukrainian president on the throne, Mr. Igor Kolomoisky, a tycoon who spent millions of dollars arming anti-Russian fighters in Ukraine, has emerged from the shadows to blast the Europe he once idolized. The oligarch now sees alliance with Russia as the only option for his country. Igor Kolomoisky, the oligarch seen by many as the shadowy power behind Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, has changed his tune sharply from the days of the 2014 Maidan Rebellion. Back then, he was an ally of pro-European President Petro Poroshenko, who even appointed him governor of the Dnepropetrovsk region. Once installed there, Kolomoisky placed a bounty on captured fighters from the self-proclaimed Donetsk and Lugansk republics, who fought against the new authorities in Kiev and spent a reported $10 million per month fielding his own private militia, also funding ultra-nationalist volunteer units like the Azov Battalion. He now believes an alliance with Russia is the best bet for Kiev. He told the New York Times in an interview, "They are stronger anyway. We have to improve our relations. People want peace, a good life. They don't want to be at war. And you, America, are forcing us to be at war. And not even giving us the money for it," he added, referring to reports that the International Monetary Fund is holding up an aid package to Ukraine until the government pursues money missing from Kolomoisky's Privat Bank, money Kolomoisky is accused of embezzling. "You all won't take us," the oligarch said of the EU and NATO. "There's no use in wasting time on empty talk, whereas Russia would love to bring us into a new Warsaw Pact." Well, just before I hand it over to you for a comment there, Matt, this seems very similar to some, you know, what Donald Trump has just been accused of, isn't it? Holding up aid in exchange for asking for Ukraine to investigate something. And here we have the IMF doing exactly the same thing, holding up an aid package until the Ukrainian government pursues a crime, basically, an alleged crime. Anyway, what are your comments on this?
Well, other than the fact that even if that's true in Trump's case or the IMF case, there's no law preventing him from doing that. When I first read this, of course, I predicted some of this a few years ago, and it shows up in my latest book, Ukrainian Nationalism. Kolomoisky, I mean, Moisky's right in the name. This man couldn't be any more Jewish. It's like, you know, Hofstra and Brandeis University had a baby. I mean, this guy is the head of the Jewish Congress. But this man has received billions from the West, from the U.S. When they say one thing that he doesn't like, when they put the slightest roadblock in his billions, he loses his mind and threatens to go to Russia. He doesn't care about, you know, Putin. This man has no principles. But this is almost a comic relief. But the interesting thing is that the West has pushed too far. There's no more assets to strip. There's nothing more to take. So some of these guys now find themselves vulnerable. You know, they're sitting on billions of dollars. And there's faction fights, you know, one group of Jews against another. And this is the result. People who support the Azov Battalion may be surprised to learn that it has been funded over the years by Kolomoisky and Newsweek, but almost every media source has reported on that. They have no problem taking money from him and fighting the National Socialists in Eastern Ukraine on his behalf. I know there's a lot of Azov people on our side, and a lot of what they say is good, except for all this stuff. And it turns out that they're not quite what the world thinks they are. So that's, you know, this is a bit of comic relief here. But the West has had enough. I mean, they know that they'll never see this money again, and nothing is going to be done. There's no healthy part of the so-called Ukrainian government that can investigate or prosecute an unhealthy part. It's all one big embezzling scheme. But of them all, this guy is by far the worst.
Well, on top of that, you've got these young Ukrainian men fighting in a war. I mean, he is actually making some sense there, where he's saying America is pushing Ukraine to fight a war against Russia, and it's not American soldiers dying, it's Ukrainian soldiers dying. You know, I think he has a good point there. Well, let's have a look at some more information about Kolomoisky. He is not an entrepreneur in the established Western sense at all. He did not go from a Soviet bloc apartment to Lake Geneva villas by inventing a new product or even by setting up an efficient business structure in an existing field. Rather, he is an opportunist who got wealthy by skillfully reading trends as the Soviet economy opened up, selling Western-made computers in the late 1980s. And later, when independent Ukraine transitioned to a market economy, Kolomoisky managed to get his hands on a large amount of privatization vouchers that put many of the juiciest local metals and energy concerns into his hands, which he then modernized. What he possesses is a chutzpah and unscrupulousness that is rare even among his peers. Vladimir Putin once called him a one-of-a-kind chancer who managed to swindle Chelsea owner Roman Abramovich himself. In the perma-chaos of Ukrainian law and politics, where all moves are always on the table, his tactical acumen has got him ahead. Kolomoisky's lifeblood is connections and power, rather than any pure profit on the balance sheet, although no one actually knows how that would read, as the Privet Group he part owns is reported to own over 100 businesses in dozens of Ukrainian spheres through a complex network of offshore companies and obscure intermediaries. There is no Privet Group, it is a media confection, the oligarch himself says. Straight-faced. Is he actually living in Ukraine? I thought he was exiled from Ukraine or something like that, Matt. Anyway, what are your comments on this?
Well, yeah, the faction fight is, of course, Abramovich versus Kolomoisky. They even have two international Jewish organizations that fight one another. Let's give you an example. There, technically, dual citizenship is banned in Ukraine, which is hilarious because all these Jewish oligarchs then developed triple citizenship. So in his case, it's Cyprus, Ukraine, Israel. That's not illegal. So that's how they get around the law. He's a lot worse than this. A lot of his holdings come from violence. I mean, he has numerous militias under his control. When he wants to take over a company, he sends 1,000 guys with tire irons to a board meeting and literally bashes heads in. He's not doing that as much as he used to, but that's how some of these guys got their money. It's not even economic. When people talk about the Ukrainian government, like in these stupid impeachment here talks, they act like the Ukrainian government even functions, like it's a government in the normal sense of the term, that it's not a colonial administration controlled by Western banks, which is all it is. That's why that's not coming up, of course, in the impeachment hearings, because, you know, the U.S., Ukraine, I have as much of a claim to be the Ukrainian president as the current one does. It's the U.S. that controls everything. And they nationalized the bank. That's true, but there is no nation or nation and state to nationalize it. It's just one faction of the oligarchs against another one. It means nothing about that. This man controls the media. He controls. And remember, Ukrainian soldiers we use that phrase very loosely. The guys who are doing the fighting there are usually Western financed or Kolomoisky financed private militias and contractors. The Ukrainian army has largely disintegrated and many of them have deserted to Russia early on in the war. It's been kind of in a lull recently. So this is far worse than that. And it's relevant not only because even the Ukrainian elites or Jewish elites are abandoning the West. Again, how much money can they give this guy, you know, these people and not ever see it again and see no progress? But it's also relevant to the impeachment hearings.
So basically, the IMF and the West have been handing lots of money over to Ukraine, and they've demanded some of it back, some of these loans back. And what Ukraine has done is quote unquote nationalized Kolomoisky's bank and basically just taken all his money. And then have they handed that? And then I guess they haven't even handed that back to the IMF. Is that what this is about?
We'll talk about that here in 1 second. But, you know, there simply is no money for these people to go to. So they're going to have to figure any possible way to get oligarchs that might not be trustworthy and plunder their wealth because, you know, the IMF says we need something. We need to be able to show our shareholders that you're giving something back. And with no functional economy, you know, they have to get the cash somehow. So, you know, to keep the aid flowing, they have to do something like this. And unfortunately, Kolomoisky, who was irritating to Abramovich and Poroshenko, you know, got one faction again using violence to so-called nationalize his assets and give that over, and they all ended up in Western banks. And the whole point of the 2014 violence was to take as much capital, liquid and otherwise, and hand it over to the West. It's sort of like Germany after World War One. I also liken the Ukrainian government to the government in Kabul, Afghanistan. They're about at the same level of legitimacy.
It's embarrassing, really. I mean, these poor, you know, the poor, I feel very, very sorry for the poor Ukrainians who are having this done to their country. Well, what might have caused Kolomoisky's pivot back to Russia then? Let's look at that. The oligarch fell out with fellow billionaire Poroshenko in early 2015 following a battle over the control of a large oil transport company between the state and the governor. The following year, his Privat Bank, which at one point handled one in four financial transactions in the country, was nationalized, though the government said that Kolomoisky had turned it into a mere shell by giving $5 billion of its savings to Privat Group companies. Other significant assets were seized. The government took to London to launch a case against his international companies, and although never banished, Kolomoisky himself decided it would be safer if he spent as long as necessary jetting between his adopted homes in Switzerland and Tel Aviv, with the occasional trip to London for the foreseeable future. I mean, what happened to the people's money that was in this bank then, Matt? Surely, I mean, just normal Ukrainians must have had money in this bank. Was that taken from them in this? How does it work when they say they nationalize it, but how actually does that work? Who loses the money?
Well, you don't. Yeah. I mean, a lot of this was in the form of savings. And just like what happened in the U.S. in 2008, it as far as they were concerned, it disappeared. But money never disappears. It only changes hands. And in this case, it was plundered and sent to their creditors in the West. Poroshenko, he makes about $40 million a year. He's not president anymore, but he had exiled, informally exiled Kolomoisky. He is a lot of his income comes from the Rothschild Trust Suisse, which is a subsidiary of Rothschild Bank AG. So he's they're deep into the Rothschild family, and given that Kolomoisky was shaky on the war in the East. He's also known. I mean, he's degenerate. He has a temper. They just don't think. Again, we'll get to that here in a second too. So the Rothschild family is also a part of these negotiations, and the Rothschild says, get rid of him, start paying us back, and get the money however you can. And well, that's how he decided to do it. So yeah, the depositors lost everything.
So Poroshenko took over his bank, and Kolomoisky's response to that was to start promoting Volodymyr Zelensky as the new president of Ukraine, because it was his TV company that was producing this comedy series where Volodymyr Zelensky was actually playing the president of Ukraine. So this is Kolomoisky's way of getting back, I guess, at Poroshenko by putting his own president in as president of the Ukraine. And also before that, there was there was a lot of worry that he was actually going to pivot towards Russia. I mean, this was actually predicted before Volodymyr Zelensky was elected. I can remember seeing a half hour BBC documentary that they actually did on the Ukraine election, and they were warning that this might be exactly what happens. Well, what does the New York Times have to say about it? And they call their article, "A Ukrainian Billionaire Fought Russia, Now He Is Ready to Embrace It." They say, "Mr. Kolomoisky, widely seen as Ukraine's most powerful figure outside the government, given his role as the patron of the recently elected President Volodymyr Zelensky, has experienced a remarkable change of heart. It is time, he said, for Ukraine to give up on the West and turn back towards Russia." His comments appeared to reflect, at least in part, his self-interested frustration that Western diplomats and the International Monetary Fund have been leaning on the president to prevent Mr. Kolomoisky from regaining control of the bank seized from him and a co-owner in 2016 amidst allegations of a multi-billion dollar embezzlement. In the impeachment hearings in recent weeks, American officials have described Mr. Kolomoisky's influence as one of the biggest problems facing Mr. Zelensky's new administration. The IMF is reportedly holding up financing for Ukraine, in part because of concerns that Mr. Zelensky is not doing enough to recover funds that Mr. Kolomoisky is accused of stealing from his Ukrainian bank, Privat Bank, which cost the government in Kiev $5.6 billion to bail out in 2016. But, well, why should Zelensky do anything against Kolomoisky? I mean, he's got Kolomoisky to thank for putting him in that role as president. You know, surely his loyalty is going to be to Kolomoisky. And if Kolomoisky says, you got to pivot towards Russia, that's what Zelensky is going to do. I think that's going to be a very positive thing, Matt. You know, I mean, that's the way I see it. Am I right? Is this a positive thing?
Yeah, and it's something that I predicted, as I said a few years ago. You know, there's only so much money. I mean, the West itself, of course, is completely broke. And there's only so much American taxpayer money that you could use to bail these people out. And these people were, you know, IMF was demanding at least some limited repayment. And when you have no money, they said, okay, Kolomoisky might be an easy target. Of course, he embezzled money. Everything these guys have has been stolen. So you can create a case against anybody. Any of the FBI is involved in this. Scotland Yard is involved in this. MI6 is involved in this. There's court cases in London, in New York. You know, he's not acting alone here. And so, yes, he has not taken control of his bank. He's lost billions of dollars in Crimea. When they went to Russia, nationalized all of his assets. In that case, it was an actual real nationalization. And well, he lost billions of dollars. So the guy is he's only worth a few billion. So in his mind, he's living in poverty compared to what it used to be. So, yeah, it's self-interested on his part. But saying that we've had enough of Western demands you know, they haven't done enough for me. And so we're going to go to Russia. It's comic on the one hand, but the Ukrainian government is going to have to, unless they get rid of him somehow, unless they kill him or whatever it is. It's revolutionary in Ukrainian and Russian politics. So that's what's happening now. And Zelensky, and I would just wonder if the impeachment is connected to this somehow, you know, to get rid of Trump so he can't support this pivot back. If Kolomoisky says it's going to be done, it's going to be done. And it also means that the war in the East may be over because so many of the militias are controlled by him. So, you know, without him, you have a victory, a complete victory for the Eastern Ukrainian national state. So yes, it's very, very good news. It's funny in how arrogant this guy is, but at the same time, you know, the West is broke. The West doesn't need anything Ukraine makes. It's exhausted with it. And the only thing it offers the West is the occasional combat soldier against the East. That's pretty much all it offers, that and sex slaves, I guess. And he knows that if the economy is going to become anything, if he's going to regain anything, he has to have the protection of Russia and China. And we'll see how that goes.
It is very comical. And also, I mean, Ukraine defaulting on its debts. I mean, that was the problem that Russia had with Ukraine, is that it wouldn't pay for its gas. It was siphoning off the gas. And now you got the same thing here. And Ukraine is not paying its debts to the IMF. I mean, it is very comical. I do hope that the war ends. Anyway, getting back to this article here, Mr. Kolomoisky, who denies any wrongdoing and says the government illegally seized his bank, has previously criticized the IMF and what he sees as an excessively assertive Western role in Ukraine, insisting in an emotional interview, as he has in the past, that Mr. Zelensky should be prepared to default on the fund's loans. And of course, the IMF is going to be wetting itself over that. I mean, that's exactly what you've been saying here, Matt, isn't it? That, you know, Zelensky's going to default on these loans. How is this linked into the Maidan revolution back there in 2014? Tell us a bit more about that.
Well, one of the major reasons for the Western support here was, you know, Ukraine owes so much money to Western banks. And to facilitate repayment, they needed a Western colonial regime that can then liquidate assets in most of Ukraine anyway and give that money over to Citibank and Rothschild Fund. Again, just like what Britain and France did to Germany after World War I, that was really the point of it. Kolomoisky was put in charge of the East, and of course, which is ineffective because his militias were defeated in the war that's continuing to go on, and they will not be liquidated for that purpose. So when he says, you know what, maybe we should default, that would negate everything that the West gained in the 2014 riots and the coup.
That's hilarious. That is so funny. I do hope he does default. Getting back to this interview here. Instead, he said the United States is simply using Ukraine to try to weaken its geopolitical rival. War against Russia, he said, to the last Ukrainian. Rebuilding ties with Russia has become necessary for Ukraine's economic survival, Mr. Kolomoisky argued. He predicted that the trauma of war will pass. Fiona Hill, the former Europe and Russia advisor at the White House, told lawmakers that she was extremely concerned by Mr. Kolomoisky's influence with Mr. Zelensky. George D. Kent, a senior State Department official, said he had told Mr. Zelensky that his willingness to break with Mr. Kolomoisky, somebody who had such a bad reputation, would be a litmus test for his independence. And William Taylor, the acting ambassador in Kiev, said he had warned Mr. Zelensky, he, Mr. Kolomoisky, is increasing his influence in your government, which could cause you to fall. And that sounds like a threat there to me, as if the Americans are saying, we're going to cause you to fall if you don't do something about it. Mr. Kolomoisky said that if he were Ukraine's president, he would proceed with the investigations sought by Mr. Trump. Asked if that risked exposing Ukraine to blowback if a Democrat were to win next year's presidential election, Mr. Kolomoisky responded, well, if they get smart with us, we'll just go to Russia. I know you're saying he's a really nasty gangster here, but I'm finding him quite humorous, Matt. Anyway, what are your comments on this?
Well, it's even, these guys, people like Hill and Kent, their role, they're not scholars. Their point was to oversee the transfer of money from Ukrainian businesses being liquidated to West European and American banks. When they see that Kolomoisky may be wavering, again, his own arrogance is being used against him. It was okay back in, 10 years ago. It's not anymore. And the faction fights among the Jewish clans, which in and of itself is revolutionary, has caused him to look for other allies. Yulia Tymoshenko, who was also created by Kolomoisky, did the same thing. And when Yanukovych was elected, she went to Russia too. The most violently anti-Russian politician tried to make nice with Putin. And they know that they could use him against the West. What Putin does is going to be interesting. Because there's one man in the world who could outsmart these gangsters, it's him. They're not going to give billions of dollars with no payback like they did like the West has done. But the fact that they're threatening this after all this violence, for all this manipulation, it is the impeachment. Kolomoisky said this was the last straw. It all came down to Abramovich, Poroshenko versus Kolomoisky. And taking the assets of his depositors and other things and giving it over. So this is, it's comical on the one hand, but it's absolutely revolutionary. And the West, people who know in the West are absolutely, NATO too is panicking. I think Kolomoisky said they're staining their shorts or something like that over, he has a tendency to use a lot of swear words in his conversation. He has a kind of an Epstein reputation over there, because if Ukraine defects, my God, that's it. It's going to completely change Central Europe.
Yeah, if Putin will have him back, like you say, that there will be strict provisos, I would have thought, on that. But again, one of the most interesting bits I find about this is that it just confirms that when aid is given away, it is always given away in exchange for something. I mean, you've made this point time and time again, Matt. So this whole impeachment proceedings against Trump for offering aid and saying in exchange, will you investigate this corruption? That's exactly what aid is used for. And here we've got the IMF doing exactly the same thing. Are we going to see Christine Lagarde from the IMF? Are we going to see her being impeached for daring to suggest that Ukraine should actually investigate corruption before they're handed over these funds? We're not going to see that. This whole impeachment charade over there in America is going to fall apart the same as the Russiagate one did. And I think at the same time, we're going to see Ukraine pivot towards Russia. And this is such a comical situation. It's just sort of following on from the comical situation of Zelensky being elected president anyway, after being the president on a TV show. It's just another episode in clown world, isn't it? Anyway, thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. Grandpa Lampshade will be back with us tomorrow with the Daily Nationalist. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.